A lot of people think, oh, I must have married the wrong person. I'm not happy. What happened? How do we get back to where we were? It's not so much about going back. It's how do you move forward in a way? How do you learn to love this person? How do you make room for each other? How do you learn to value and appreciate each other, even with some of those annoying differences? Part of erotic love is this sort of struggle. There's a struggle in erotic love, and there's struggle in bliss. There's both, as there is in good sex.
Welcome to Conversations with Dr. Jennifer, a collection of interviews on the topics of relationships, sexuality, spirituality, and more, all featuring Dr. Finlayson Fife.
We have a truly special guest joining us. We have Dr. Jennifer Finlayson Fife. She's a licensed therapist, coach, and just an all-around expert on intimacy and sexuality and committed relationships. So we're so grateful to have you joining us. Thank you for being a part of this.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. Today, we're going to be diving into a topic that I think a lot of couples wonder about. The topic is, how do we keep the spark alive? How do we keep that going? So whether, you know, if you're watching and you've been married for 5 years or 20 years, or might be in the middle of raising kids, which is where I'm at, or, you know, navigating maybe a quieter house, this conversation is going to be for everybody. We'll just jump right in. I'd love to start by acknowledging something I think a lot of couples feel, especially those that have been together for a while. That's like that initial passion and desire that was there when you were dating or you were newly married, and it just doesn't feel the same anymore. The sex has just become routine at this point. So my question is, do you think that that fading spark is like the natural course of long-term relationships? Or is that a sign that maybe something deeper there might need to be addressed? Is that normal to feel that way?
Both. It's both normal and also a signal of what a couple may need to address. So when we first fall in love, we're just immersed in erotic energy or Eros energy, which is this expansive feeling that just makes you feel so alive. It makes you feel like you belong to another person, but also you can be true to yourself. And that feels so good. I can be me and be loved. And you desire all of me, right? Like even my whole body, even the part that other people might not want to be close to. So it's deeply, deeply validating, and we love it and we want to lock it in. But, you know, that initial immersion dissipates for everybody. You get more in the day-to-day of life. You start seeing your differences that are compelling in the beginning now start to feel a little more annoying. Like, why are you doing it that way? That's the wrong way to do things. And so there's some natural kind of coming down to earth that happens, that needs to happen. But there's also a range in which some people want predictability so much that they actually snuff a lot of the life force out of the marriage in their effort to make things feel more predictable, make things feel more familial, like as in how a family should be. And then others that do a better job of keeping something romantic and alive and growing happening. So while it's normal, we have to think about, are we living in the marriage in a way that keeps it growing, expanding, feeling authentic and real? Learning to really grow in our ability to love each other. Again, those are the two things we want in a good romantic relationship, is I can be me and I am loved by you. And that's what good sex is too.
Oh, absolutely. That's great. So that kind of that honeymoon phase that people talk about, do you feel that decline kind of fading, like you were just talking about, is that kind of inevitable? Does that just typically happen, or is that something that...
It's inevitable to a degree, because when you're in it, it's a little bit fantasy, not full reality. There's a lot of projection happening. There's a lot of like, oh no, I love that. Oh, it's fine. You know, like you're deeply accommodating because you've got so much of that dopamine flooding your brain.
It's great.
And so it's, I mean, live it. Love it. It's a great phase. But that dopamine starts to decrease and you go from the kind of eye to eye to the shoulder to shoulder stage of a relationship. And so then you're, again, those natural differences that you find so compelling in that falling in love stage then can grate, and they can be like, okay, look, I want to belong to you, but stop telling me what to do.
Right.
Let's do things the right way, as in my way, you know? That is inevitable. But again, it doesn't mean you have to snuff the spark. It doesn't have to become sterile. It depends a lot on how you deal with those differences. Do you get resentful? Do you just pressure the other person? Do you yield so much that you don't feel like yourself anymore? Because that will kill the spark faster than anything. It looks loving to just kind of go along to keep the peace, but that will drain desire really quickly because, again, we want to be true to ourselves in good sex. And if we feel like we're giving up so much to keep our partner happy with us, we're not going to desire.
We're not. That's great. So, yeah, do you feel like there's anything we can do to prevent or soften that drop in the connection that it will happen, but there's steps we can take or things we can do to kind of ease that?
Yeah, so educating ourselves is really important. And a lot of the courses that I teach are about helping people better understand what's happening in marriage and how to relate to those challenges. Because what a lot of people do is think, oh, I must have married the wrong person. I'm not happy. What happened? How do we get back to where we were? Yeah. And it's not so much about going back. You can't go back. You know, you know too much now.
Yeah, exactly.
It's how do you move forward in a way? How do you learn to love this person? How do you learn to be true to the best in yourself while allowing your partner to be true to the best in themselves? How do you make room for each other? How do you learn to value and appreciate each other, even with some of those annoying differences? And when I say annoying, I mean extroverts tend to marry introverts. People that are really structured and planful tend to marry spontaneous people. And then when those come up against each other, like the really neat person marries the messy person, it's like, of course, I love you, but like clean
but
stuff.
But this drives me crazy. Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Okay. And so if we don't pathologize it, it's like it's actually part of erotic love is this sort of struggle. There's a struggle in erotic love and there's struggle in bliss. There's both. And as there is in good sex. Okay. Mm-hmm. So in some ways to recognize there's nothing going wrong. All the people that were just like me, I wasn't attracted to them. They were
awesome.
We got each other. Right. They were boring. It was the one that was mysterious to me that I wanted to be close to them.
Yeah.
And so the fact that they're doing life differently should not shock me. And I made a promise to love this annoying one. Okay.
I like that.
And so how do I love this one that's so different than me? How do I actually stop trying to get them to be like me and start understanding them as they are? That doesn't mean like whatever they want, I need to do it. But can I see the world from their perspective?
From their perspective.
Can I better understand how they do the world and why it matters and how I do the world and how can we find a way to build a bridge across those differences?
Yeah.
So that neither of us is reducing ourselves to keep the peace, but we're not being indulgent either. You know, that we're bringing the best in ourselves to one another, which is a wonderful thing to do for kids. But it's also a way to be a couple because you bless each other through your differences and you manage the more indulgent aspects of that. But in good erotic marriages, as in when I say erotic, I mean they're full of life energy. That's what Eros means. Mm. It feels alive. It feels like it's growing. Those are the happiest marriages. When people talk about being happy in marriage, they reference a sense that they can be true to themselves, but they've grown through the marriage. They've become more of who they are designed to be, not less. Yeah. When we're unhappy, we're shutting it down, we're closing, we're walling, we're not sharing who we are, or we're busy trying to get the other person to be like us. So if we're willing to grow, that's keeping the marriage alive and it keeps the sexual energy there too. You feel good about yourself. Because, you know, you're being a little less indulgent. You're becoming a better human. You're learning to love another person. And doing that makes you feel good about yourself. It makes you feel desirable. It makes you like them.
Yeah.
And it's the energy of good sex.
I love that. That's awesome. I want to talk about the influence of our upbringings. I think for a lot of people, especially those who are raised in more sexually conservative environments or homes, sometimes sex can be more presented as a means to an end. Maybe it's tied to having kids or like being a good spouse. What would you say to those individuals who are maybe trying to overcome that mindset?
Idea.
How can they reframe their relationship with sexuality in a more fulfilling way?
I literally just finished a book that is all about that reframing of sexuality, because when we've grown up in a culture that teaches women that sex is their marital duty and it's an entitlement for a husband, you destroy the source, sex. And you know, it's a job to do. It can't be a place of aliveness. It can't be a place of playfulness. And so we have to understand, if we're going to get it back to this place of desire, that in general, again, you marry someone who's different than you. So your marriage is going to be full of differences, including sexual differences, and you're going to orient to sexuality in different ways. And they're both legitimate. They both have strength within them. And so rather than going to the safe route of I have needs and I must accommodate needs, because it's not safe at all, it creates all kinds of resentments on both sides. Instead, I think it's important to think about when we fall in love, it has a sexual foundation. We don't usually talk like that, but we're saying, like, I desire you. I want to touch you. I want to be close to you, and I want you to be close to me. And I don't want you to go anywhere else with that. I don't want you to someone else. So that is a foundational energy in a romantic marriage.
Yeah.
The problem is when we get married, we often then kill that energy through entitlement and duty and so on. And we then really undermine the foundation of the marriage. The way to be true that is to say, look, I don't want my spouse to bring his sexuality elsewhere or her sexuality elsewhere. Although sex gives me some anxiety, I would rather relate to it as a duty, because then I can say I'm being the good spouse and not deal with all of my anxieties about my own body, my own desirability, desire in and of itself, because so many women I work with, this is true for men too, but we often grow up in the idea that desires are bad. That makes us selfish.
Right.
Desire is an important part of living life joyfully, of leaning into the uncertainty, of desiring another soul. There are desires that are bad for us, okay? But there's desires that are essential to our soulfulness, to our joyfulness. And so we have to understand how those are related to an intimate marriage. And so if we can understand there's a safety almost in the duty frame, it's more exposed to live in the desire frame. But the desire frame is what we're yearning for in marriage. I want to know that you love me, that you desire me, that you're not doing this because you have a job to do.
Right.
I want to know that you don't just have needs. That's why you want to be with me, that you want to be with me as a person for your sexuality. So either side of that is feels horrible, right? So I want to feel that you love me. You want to be close to me. That's also a scarier way to live, because you're more exposed. You're showing your soul to another soul. You don't
vulnerable.
There's no guarantee. Yeah. There's no guarantee. They could say, I've seen better. I don't really.
That's a scary. So, it is
very scary. Even in marriage, you'd think in marriage we'd feel so safe, but no, we don't. In fact, we often feel safer showing our aspects of ourselves to a stranger who we're never going to see again than to the one we share a mortgage with, right? So, So it's learning to live more courageously and intimately, in which a lot of soul growth happens. But it's counterintuitive, it's scary, and we can take refuge in duty and obligation and needs. Mm-hmm. We pay a really big price when we do that.
Yeah, I love that. That's excellent advice. I think that's wonderful.
Starting on February 19th, I'm going to be offering a book club. The cost is $59 per household and is essentially 5 dates. You'll meet with me each week for a deep dive into the concepts that are taught in That We Might Have Joy. And I'll use your questions to guide immersive discussions and helping you to see more clearly how the teachings in the book can apply to you and your relationship. Whether you've already read the book or have been meaning to get around to it, this is a wonderful opportunity to engage with the material in a whole new way together. So join us and experience how the insights of That We Might Have Joy can reshape the way you see yourself, your relationships, faith, and joy. You can order your copy and learn more about the book club by clicking on the link in the show notes.
Let's talk a little bit about the middle years of marriage, like that time when you're raising young kids. This is the phase I'm in, so I'm extra eager for this question.
Sure.
But you're just like trying to make it through the day, more or less. Mm-hmm. So what advice would you give for couples that are in this season of life? We want to prioritize intimacy and connection, but we're just so depleted. Where do I even start? We're just in the thick of it.
I have two thoughts about that. First of all, It's just true. There's just a lot of intensity. There's a lot of demand. And so it can often be like literally just unrealistic to get a date night in, to get time alone. You want to also belong to yourself and to reinforce your identity as a couple. That's just really important for kids too, to see their parents as a couple that loves each other. Right. But it's also just good because you're more at peace. And so you're more at peace with yourself. You're more at peace in your interactions with your kids. So making the marriage a priority matters. It's also addressing what I see is being able to be yourself in the marriage, to belong to your identity as more than a mother. And nothing wrong with being a mother.
Like
just a mother, but
not just the mother.
Individual, as a woman, as a person who has other desires and aspects of herself that are also alive in her still. Mm-hmm. And I understand those get sidelined for a period when you're busy parenting, when you're busy doing those things, but they still have access to them. And
so it's
more
important
than dates, and this is harder work, so it's easier to say it than do it, is to really feel like I can be myself in this marriage. That when I climb into bed at night, I don't feel a wall between me and my spouse, or that I feel like I have to protect myself from him or her. When I get in bed, that I can melt into the presence of them being there. There's something rejuvenating about being there with them and even enjoying some sexual energy, even if you don't have intercourse, right? Just like feeling that a little bit of that energy and connection, and I'm glad you're here. That's really good for the soul of a marriage. It's essential for the soul of a marriage. And so couples can get through busy times when they even have those touchstones, those moments of here you are, I'm glad you're here, I like you.
Yeah.
But we have each other because that sustains the essential meaning of having good dates or being able to go out for a night together without the kids. Those things all matter. But even more is that sense of we are friends ultimately.
Yes.
We know and like each other.
That's really good. I feel like that like just resonates with me so much because I'm like, that is where I'm at. So I love that. But I'm sure many people, either they've been there or they will be there. You know, that's wonderful advice. I love that. You have said before that sex should be a refuge, like a safe, a connecting place where you want to be. And I feel like for women, especially, again, this could be for men as well, but women especially, sometimes it just feels more like a to-do list.
Yes.
What would you say to those women who maybe feel like sex is just another demand or something to check off the list rather than a place for pleasure or connection?
Well, some men get upset when I say this, but if you're going to prioritize one gender over the other around sex, it must be women. Okay. So that is to say, women care very much about the quality of sex. Men tend to be more focused on the quantity. Now, I know that part is not entirely fair to men, but if I had to kind of force people into groups, that's the way I would say it. Women are pickier. They're biologically more vulnerable to let someone into their body. The way that a lot of women have been taught to handle that is to just basically not deal with what it is that they desire, not know what it is that they desire, what would make sex worth wanting, and instead just go to the yes-no frame. Either I accommodate or I don't, as opposed to what would make this be more of a place of refuge, like that I belong to myself and enjoy being here, that I can feel taken care of, that actually to have sex is not about taking care of your needs. Again, if you're going to go any direction, have it go the other way.
Yeah.
That you surrender into pleasure, that you can let yourself go, that you move out of the mindset of having to take care of anyone. Good sex women are not taking care of their partners at all. Anytime a woman's worried about her husband's sexual needs is the opposite energy of good sex. It will make you hate it. You already have kids. You don't want to take care of someone's needs. Female sexuality is deeply narcissistic. What I mean by that, it's not you're being selfish. It's that it's more referencing of the woman, her desirability, her beauty, how compelling she is. And the couple plays in that dance. You think about a couple's dance.
Mm-hmm.
Woman is the highlight. The masculine is there, like structuring and moving around her, but he's lifting her up. He's flipping her. She's the beauty.
Okay. Yes.
Or good music. Men are the rhythm section.
Yeah.
Women, they're the melody. They're the one you look at. Okay?
Yes, absolutely. I love that
sexual energy.
Analogy.
Okay? And that's good sex. And people might be like, that's not fair. It's not about fairness. It's about, do you want to have good sex or not?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So when they're just doing the duty,
just doing the thing,
it doesn't work. You have to believe in your own desirability as a woman. You have to believe in the legitimacy of your pleasure. You have to let yourself surrender into it. And that takes a lot of strength. I believe in the worthiness that I receive pleasure, that I can let myself be taken care of, known in this way, that I can be given to without worrying about if he's okay. That's an important skill for a couple to learn, because then they both flourish. When people say to me, that's not fair, they're afraid they're just going to give and give and wither away. Rather than when you are received deeply, when the masculine is received by the feminine, and the masculine can help the feminine thrive, they both thrive.
They both,
both better for it. Not to mention, she's like, yeah, I'd like to have sex again. That was amazing. I'm talking about that there's deep pleasure in both, that they're playing out a polarity that makes both feel more connected, more radiant, more loved, more valued, more cherished. And so it's so good for the soul of a marriage, because you have more joy in that marriage. And it's a source for the struggle that you go, you know, the places you're different, there's that can be a struggle, of course. But then there's also just coping in the world. It's like, well, we may be different. We may drive each other crazy sometimes, but dang it. Like, I'm so glad you're here. I love you. You are my person. And you anchor me in the world. That's what we're looking for in good sex and good marriage.
Yes.
And so,
I love that.
Yeah.
My next question I wanted to ask was, I'd like to take a little moment and talk about your recent course. It's called Sex Worth Wanting, which I think is such a powerful title. And I feel like you've kind of been describing that. So to follow up with that, but like, what in your view makes sex actually worth wanting?
You know, what makes it worth wanting is this deep feeling like I can fully be myself with you, that I feel deeply accepted, that we can take pleasure in one another. That's what it is. Dr. Steven Schneider said this idea. I heard him once say this, and I just thought this really captures it. Like, when a parent is holding a, you know, a one-year-old, and they just kiss that baby, they love the baby, and the baby's existence is giving pleasure to the parent. So they're kissing the baby in a way that expresses that pleasure. Like, just your existence fills me up.
Yes.
That's what we want in good sex. That's what we want. Like, I just love being with you. I like you. I like being close to you. I like touching you, and that I can know you in every way. And it's not just about the sex. It's about the soul of the partner. It is the sex. I don't want to dismiss that.
Right.
But it's about the soul of the partner. Like, I know you. I love you. I love being close to you. And through the body is a powerful way to be close to you.
Yeah.
That's what we want in good sex. And it takes some courage to develop that, because it's revealing ourselves. It means growing ourselves up. When we reveal ourselves, our partner isn't just like, oh, wow, everything there is amazing. Sometimes they're like, no, that's not, I don't like that things.
Yeah.
And we want the fantasy that somebody will just applaud everything that's there. But in reality,
that's our reality.
Sometimes for good reasons, our spouse is like, no, that hurts. I don't like it when you do that. It feels too self-serving or whatever it is. So it's a process of revealing ourselves and growing ourselves up to refine and to bring the best in ourselves to each other and to celebrate one another. And that's where the joy is. That's worth wanting. That's worth losing an hour's sleep for easy.
Absolutely.
You come away from that just feeling grounded and enlightened. Like, there's a spirituality in it. And a lot of us think of spirituality as contained and rigid, but I'm talking about like a transcendence, or a sense of time slowing down, a sense of really meeting one another in this way that really is what the soul longs for.
Yeah.
So we can cultivate that in marriage when we know the rules of engagement, when we know what it is we're trying to create. A lot of us have inherited ideas about that actually interfere. And so my work is really about helping people understand what it is we're aiming for and what will help us get there.
Mm-hmm.
It's helping us grow our souls up to become capable of intimate love. But when we understand that's what we're doing, it makes it so much easier to do it.
Like you said, that educating ourselves. I love that. I know our time is just about up, but to finish, so inspiring hope in those who maybe feel like they're past the point of that spark being rekindled. Like if there's a couple, they still love each other. They want to make things work, but they're feeling discouraged. Like
they're downtrodden by resentments and differences.
Yeah. What would you say to them? Can they rekindle that spark? Even if it feels like it's gone, what advice would you give them?
Well, what I would say is certainly you can. That is to say, I've worked with plenty of couples where there's been a long period of resentment. There's maybe been infidelity. There's been things that have really killed the initial source of the marriage.
Yeah.
But what is also true about marriage, and I just want to be careful, I'm not here to say that that means it's true for everybody. I'll come to that because in some cases it can't, there's not enough desire or will in some cases.
Yeah, okay. That's understandable.
So one of the things that I've noticed about Eros love is that, you know, C.S. Lewis said something like, if you told lovers in their early stages that they were not going to be happy together, they, first of all, they wouldn't believe you when they're in that deep enchantment, right? But even if they believed you, they wouldn't care. They're like, I'm doing it anyway.
Right.
This is true. Compelling about our partner, even when they drive us crazy, even when we feel heartbroken by them, that there's something about that that our soul is trying to get worked out. And I think respecting that matters. Now, that doesn't mean that you should be with anybody, meaning sometimes the healthiest, best thing for your soul is to walk away from a situation. And I really do mean.
Yeah.
But we're often yearning to get something worked out with this person, even when we've experienced rejection and or we have been rejecting. What does that for people is getting more and more honest. It's revealing our souls more in marriage.
Yeah.
And help of a good therapist, right? With somebody that can guide you to really help you see what are the resentments you've been living out, but not dealing with directly.
Yeah.
Because if you can help a couple deal more directly with how they've negatively impacted the marriage, what it is they're trying to work out about the marriage, you free them up to make better choices, to do things that are more loving, that are more fair, that are more invested in the marriage thriving, rather than every time they're upset, going and separating themselves from the marriage, talking to a friend, looking at porn, doing something that expresses their resentment, but keeps the marriage stuck. Instead, it's like pushing the couple back into the conflict, in a sense, to sort it out. And to come up with something that resonates with the best in themselves. When you do that, you give the life energy back to the marriage. Okay. Now, people have to choose it. They have to want it enough to do that work. They have to be willing to face themselves enough. If they are, remarkable things can happen in a marriage. But it has to be two people that want to do that.
Yeah, absolutely. I love that. So if a couple was listening, you know, today to this interview and they wanted to do just one thing tonight to increase the passion or to take the steps of feeling that spark a little more vibrant, what would you suggest?
One of my go-tos is to reveal something about yourself that you've been afraid to reveal. Okay. Like something
that
you find desirable, something that you've never told your spouse, intimacy into the marriage and particularly intimacy about your sexuality. Like what's something an idea that's always appealed to me or what's a fantasy that I've sometimes had or what's something, you know, that I thought as a younger person, just something. Because again, we're so guarded that we think it will make us safe, but it actually, the marriage thrives in intimacy, in exposure and being willing to reveal who we are.
Yeah, I love that. That's awesome advice. I'm going to do that tonight too. I love that. So, well, thank you so much. This has been such an enlightening and hopeful and informational. It's just been such a good conversation. So thank you for your time. Before we say goodbye, I know that you've got a website, you've got courses. So would you take just a second and tell us how, if someone wants to learn more with you or, you know, do that.
So my website is finlayson-fife.com. I mean, that's my last name, finlayson-fife.com. And on there, you can hear podcasts for free where people interview me on various topics. I also have a podcast where I work with couples on these issues. The couples are anonymous. We use pseudonyms. We change their voices. But you can hear me actually work with couples around sexuality issues, conflict in the marriage, and so on. I have now 6 courses. One of them is the one you referenced, Sex Worth Wanting. But they are all courses basically designed to help you come to peace with yourself and your sexuality and be more capable of an intimate partnership. All those are there. They are self-paced courses. And then I do live events as well. My background is a Latter-day Saint, and I did my dissertation on Mormon women and sexuality. So my focus has been working with religious couples, but so many people take my stuff that are not religious.
Yeah.
It's not
so applicable. Yeah.
It's just using a language that people often relate to, but helping people to know how to think about the challenges of creating an intimate marriage.
That's wonderful. Well, thank you again so much. Thank you for your time and for being part of our sex seminar. We're grateful that we had you. So thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening. If you enjoyed today's episode, we ask that you please rate, review, and share the podcast so that more people can find and benefit from Dr. Jennifer's work.